Okay, next up on the agenda, we have the K-9 Subcommittee follow-up with Colonel Rappich.
Thank you. Last month we met and had a discussion and follow-up to the issue specifically with the administrative rule the Post Council oversees regarding the certification of post-certified police canines, and specifically what qualifies or what should be the requirements for a qualifying canine entity. Myself was there. I was there as well as Mr. Yockey, Director Reese, and Deputy Director Garcia was there as well. What it came down to is being able to make sure as we get requests or post entertains requests for a qualifying certifying entity to make sure we're maintaining that certification standard at the level that we would all expect to be able to do that and have that universal standard regardless of as we share dogs. I'm looking with those, and two things kind of came up is one, what would be the standards that need to be required for an entity outside of Post? If Post isn't the certifying entity and we're allowing another entity to handle that certification, what should be the requirements? All of these captured in the draft administrative rule I think you have. And then the other one is looking at the potential, not necessarily identifying conflicts that existed, but the potential for conflicts between a canine vendor versus being a canine certifying entity. And identifying the fact that there probably should be a separation between the entities that are actually supplying the canines and the ones that are actually certifying the canines for their certification. And in doing that and reconciling that with the help of Mr. Yockey, we came up with the draft rule that you have in front of you, which kind of identifies that. And if you would, this would actually probably be an easy way to get it on record along with the document in here. In changing the rule, the previous rule had said a qualifying canine entity includes the Utah Peace Officers Standards and Utah Post Police Service Dog Program or any other canine training entity approved by the Post Council and maintained on a list by the Post Director that satisfies the standards provided in this rule. Our recommendation is to eliminate that language and replace it with the following. First, a qualifying canine entity includes, first, a Utah Post Police Service Dog Program or any entity that satisfies the standards provided in this rule is approved by the Post Council and meets the following criteria. And those criteria are four. Demonstrates the adherence to nationally recognized and proven best practices in canine training, assessments, certifications, and methodologies. B, employs certified canine judges who adhere to nationally recognized and proven best practices in canine training, assessments, and certification methodologies. C, qualifies as a nonprofit organization. They're making the separation between those that are actually selling these canines and profiting on the sale of canines versus those that are actually certifying their certification. And B, is nationally recognized or nationally accredited in the canine field. And you would have to have someone actually explain what those are. We did go into some detail as to what those standards are and what those recognitions are. I don't have my notes in front of me and I can't remember verbatim, but those do exist. And there's something that the Post Director felt like he could be fairly confident in evaluating whether they're meeting those standards and those certifications or not. And so with that, that's the recommendation we would have is the alteration of the rule. And I would defer to Director Reese for anything that I missed on that.
I think you nailed it. We also have a, I don't know if you're, if I gotta clarify some of those national
accreditations. What are we looking for then?
Are we looking for a motion to adopt this, Mr. Torgensen?
Yes, I believe a motion would be in order. I've got a question. Colonel, you said that the vendor would not be the certifier, right?
Yes.
Is that, are all vendors not nonprofits?
So I think you have separation between the two with the intent. The vendor obviously is for profit because they're selling the canines. The national, the accrediting entity would have to be a nonprofit.
Okay, so that's how you mean that they will not be the same as an end.
Are there entities, nonprofits that are already established doing Sorry. That? Are there nonprofits already established that are providing this accreditation within Utah currently, or would this be something that would need to be scaled up?
That was my understanding. Okay. I don't think that Wendell could probably explain who those might be better than I.
I apologize. I did not hear the entirety of your question.
Oh, I was just asking as far as the nonprofits that provide certification for canine programs, if those currently exist within Utah, or if that's something that we would have to look to outside states, agencies, or would have to spin up within Utah to provide that service.
To my knowledge, there are two non-Utah nationally accredited or nationally accepted entities who are providing certification for canines and officers in the state of Utah and have been functioning in that capacity for a number of years now.
Are they nonprofit?
Nonprofit.
Thank you.
So when they are accredited, how long is that accreditation period for that entity until they have to re-accredit themselves in order to provide this service?
If I understand your question to mean the entity providing the accreditation, these two particular that have been functioning successfully in Utah so far, they are organizations that are nonprofit organizations. They are self-policing, meaning that they each have a board of directors or some internal structure that provides quality control under the guidance of legal advisors. And so it's almost a yearly auditing and accreditation process for the two existing entities.
Okay, thank you.
I also have a question about the withdrawal of post-council approval. I mean, I don't know if that's something that needs to be in rule. Is there a process if we approve one of these agencies and then at some point post determines that they're not meeting the criteria, what's the process for withdrawing that post-council approval? Does that need to be in rule?
That's a great question. It's not provided in the rule, so it had to be by notice of agency action and then follow up with an investigation and probably an ALJ hearing. But so if Ms. Liu would like a recertification period, that could answer Sheriff Sparks' question.
Yeah.
If you want to recertify every so often or have some way to audit them and what they're teaching.
We didn't, during the canine committee, we didn't really talk. I think what we all discussed was just this simple change, but if we want to look at something like that, we definitely can.
Yeah, I think the premise behind it, though, is these approved entities are already accredited through a well-known body. As soon as they lose that accreditation or are unable to meet that standard, they no longer qualify under this rule. So it wouldn't necessarily be us having to remove anybody. They have eliminated themselves because they don't meet the criteria of being accredited by that body.
That was my understanding as well. When they no longer met all four of those criteria, then by default they would not be eligible to be a qualifying entity.
Well, we need to go through a process to substantiate that lack of adherence to the rule. I guess this is my question.
How would we know?
Yeah.
They were no longer meeting the requirements.
We need an annual letter or something from the certifying agency just to post-credit.
It goes back to your question about how long it's
I would say yes. That whoever the certifying people are that are putting their stamp on approval for these canine entities to perform their work, I think that letter, like if they are being looked at yearly in their qualifications and what they're doing, then I think that letter should be generated and sent back.
At least a letter saying, hey, we accredited them, and it's good for 12
X
months.
X amount of time.
How long?
Yep.
So at least we can say, post-director can say, yeah, this is approved, and I didn't go.
It sounds like we need an amendment to this. We need some additional language.
Give some context to everybody here. When we were talking about this, these two entities that are currently operating are nationally renowned. The chances of them going by the wayside are very, very slim. I'm not opposed to, you know, putting something in rule where it allows for decertification, like the sheriff was talking about. But part of the reason we wanted to narrow this definition, or at least clarify the definition, is because Post currently doesn't have the resources to continually audit these programs. These nationally renowned entities would kind of serve that function for us, as former Sergeant Nope was talking about. They've got their best standards, they've got their councils in place, they've got their checks and balances in place. So that would kind of serve that, I guess, gatekeeper function that Post doesn't have the resources to fulfill. Any vendors that utilize these two entities would, as I understand it, would be fine under Utah law.
So I think it would be fairly simple to add something to this rule with Marcus's legal background to just say that they are required to show a certificate or a letter from that entity, whether that is industry standard for every year, Wendell, or if it's 2 years, 3 years, I don't know what that standard is, but we could outline that in the rule that they need to have a current letter on file or certification on file from that accrediting agency.
It makes some sense.
Mr. Yockey, do you think you could come up with some language that follows that line, and maybe we can take a look at it at our next meeting?
Definitely.
Thank you. Add in there that Post shall review them annually, what, every other year?
I'd like to see it. Come up with some language. Let's take a look at it. Okay. Anything further on that? The next item is rival canine Russ Bishop, and I'm not sure who's presenting on this.
All right. I will be brief because you guys, I'm sure, have had a long day. So,
could you state your name for the record, please, sir?
Yes. My name is Russ Bishop. I'm the owner and a lead trainer for a company called Rival Canine. We're a new company. We've only been officially organized as one for about a year. I am a former canine officer. I went back through Post back in 2004 and 2005. I worked for the city of American Fork for about 11 and a half years. 4.5 of those was as one of the department's canines. I was a former Post-certified canine instructor for both patrol and narcotics. My intention coming here today is just to let you guys know a little bit about me and then give you the opportunity just to consider, if you would please, the idea that a third-party trainer, somebody who truly believes in the rule of law, can help enhance what Post already has going. So when I set out to do this after I retired back in 2016, Post was the standard, and I still think that it is. Some of the best and brightest minds I've ever met in the canine world came from some of my mentors in that class, Wendell being one of them, anywhere down from Ken Etchell to Tom Smith, Art Lopez. All of these people were a lot of my mentors, and they truly did, behind the scenes, hold everybody to an incredibly high standard. You were expected to certify, you were expected to follow the standard, you were told early on that Post in Utah carries some of the highest standards available out there in the country, which I believed in. The test was not easy. But it was very fulfilling when you actually did it. I certified my dog. I went through the Post class 4 different times, 2 times for my first dog, 2 after he retired. I brought a new dog through when I got my instructor, went back through 2 times there as well, and then certified with Art Lopez every year. My intention was, I recognize some of the problems with that is you get large classroom sizes when you're trying to fit 10, 15, 17 dogs in a Post class. So my intention was, with the knowledge that I had learned from Post, was to merely help aid, and even some of the dogs that I've kind of helped assisted over time, I have made it very clear that they are to meet the Post standard. That we, when we train, when we help, when we do obedience, when we do tracking, when we do everything, it was always meant to be the Post standard. I don't know that needs to change. I think Post still has the standard as set down by Wendell himself. So I like the idea of helping aid the Post Council and the Post Canine Program by allowing third-party trainers such as myself to merely help train and get dogs ready for the already existing post test. That's how I've trained a couple of the dogs for some of these smaller agencies, who aren't able to, for one reason or other, send their dog up to a class for 8 straight weeks. Mapleton City down there in Utah County, one of them, they have 11 full-time officers. So them sending an officer for 8 weeks to try to get certified was something they wouldn't even have been able to do, which means that they don't get a canine for their department. My program, because we're small, I don't ever really hope to get, I know this sounds weird, but I would like to just keep my own stuff down to really small, personalized, one-on-one, or one-on maybe a couple training, so the dogs get a lot of reps, a lot of quality reps, and that each training is set to the individual dog. Anybody who's trained a dog can tell you that each one of them all have a little bit of a different personality, especially Malinois. They're all a little bit deranged. They all kind of have, moments where they have to purge the demons, but they're all individual dogs. So what a program like mine or many others might do is allow more of that focused one-on-one, hey, this individual dog needs this style of training today, and you can get lots of reps in, instead of trying to accommodate somewhere up to 12, 15 to 17 dogs in a class. My intention is merely to aid post. Even though I'm retired, even though I haven't been in law enforcement for a number of years, I still revere the state of Utah. I still love the law enforcement around here, and I would love to see my company or myself, as well as some of the colleagues out there who are third-party trainers, help get more of these dogs on the road. With obviously your help. I love the idea of maintaining standards. I am in favor of making sure that third-party people meet specific standards, as I would expect you would hold, any of your postgraduates. So my intention, again, is just one of I would like to help, as a third-party trainer, get dogs ready for the post-test, whatever test that may be. And I thank you for your time. I won't take too much more, so. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Any questions from anybody on the council? Are we looking for a motion, or what are we looking for here, if anything at all? Or is this just informational? I think it has to be put on the agenda, yeah. Okay. Thank you, sir. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. All of you.
I do have a question. So what he's asking for as far as being able to work as a small third party, is that in conflict with our previous conversation? Regarding the rules for canines? So if we could just clarify, please.
And we also have Art Lopez online if I screw anything up too badly. So this does mix with the last discussion we had. The way the process works at Post for Canines right now, and I know Wendell and Art will correct me, is it's very similar to our waiver process. So what I believe the gentleman here is talking about is allowing the dogs to challenge the testing process, which any vendor can do, which I kind of relate to our, we have to go through a PT test. If you're coming from out of state as an officer, you have to go through a PT test and a written test. That's challenging the process, right? The other flip side to that is the credentialing. So with our waiver process, in my function as a basic training supervisor, I look at every curriculum from every academy for every waiver officer that comes through to make sure it's at least mostly similar to ours, covering the same topics, firearms, DT, EBO, all that. The issue, and again, with the letter that's in your packets here from the Mapleton chief, the issue that Post has with the Mapleton process right now is not necessarily with the dog, it's with the handler. So yes, this is kind of at odds with what we just talked about, but I just wanted to make it clear and give some context that when it comes to the animals themselves, any vendor, any trainer can allow their dogs to challenge the process. It's the handler certifications that I think we have issues with, and I'll defer to Wendell and to Art online.
So we do have a bit some chief online.
Oh, okay.
Waiting. Art is not online. So okay. I think the label is city PD chief.
Let's put
him on. Thank you,
everybody. Thank you.
I'd like to address that and refer to Wendell if Art's not online.
I'm sorry, sir, I didn't hear you.
I'll try first. So
Yes and no. They don't have to go through POST, but as Wendell was talking about, we do have those accredited entities that would allow them to get certified adequately to say allow them to operate as handlers.
Certainly that's the way we do it, is we tell officers if they want to go through a different program rather than go through the whole 8 weeks through POST, they can challenge, go through another entity and challenge it and get certified to one of those other two that are already recognized. So there's another process for them to be able to do it as well. That might help some of these other agencies like me.
Okay. It appears we have the chief from Mapleton online. Welcome, sir. Okay? We can.
Hey, first I apologize. I'd love to be there in person, but my dad's on a deer hunt, so I'm saying hello from southern Utah in a deer camp. So thanks for letting me zoom in for just a minute here. I want to clarify a couple of things. First off, I'm not asking for our dog or our handler to challenge anything. I not only request, I want our dog and our handler to be put through the ringer by POST and the certification process. I want our handler, which is Officer Rebecca Hatch, to come up to POST and be with ART and go through those processes. What I'm looking for is the many hours that Rebecca has put in with Russ Bishop in Mapleton training over the last year to be recognized for her hours, to be counted toward the amount of hours for her training. I still want her to certify through POST. I still want her to come to POST. I just want her hours of training with Russ to be recognized. She has got one-on-one training for 11 months now, and it shows with the dog. And the way I understand it is that the hours that she has put in with Russ cannot be used towards her the amount of certification hours that's required by her to receive. And so, I mean, credit to ART. ART's been very welcoming. ART's awesome. I have a lot of respect for ART. But I hope you guys can appreciate the fact that with 11-man police department, we're an accredited police department. We've got some good things going down here, but it's hard to send a good, solid officer away for 8 weeks. So, and it just so happened that we got lucky that Russ lives in our town where she can train one-on-one with him and get one-on-one training while she's on duty. It was just a huge benefit that I couldn't pass up. And I just hope all those hours over the last 11 months that she spent one-on-one with Russ can simply be counted towards her certification. I want her to come up there and be put through the ringer. I want her to come up there and do all the post certifications. I'm just simply asking the hours that she put in for the last year with Russ be counted toward that 240 hours that she needs. I don't want to challenge anything. I want her to go through it. I just want to be able to recognize what she's put in for the last 11 months.
All right. Seems like a question for POST of whether they would accept the hours.
So the issue at hand is that Mr. Bishop is not currently a POST certified canine instructor. And he hasn't been for, I'm not sure how many years. I believe it's over 6 years. Is that correct, Wendell?
I believe so.
And so that's where we run into an issue on accepting those as bona fide training hours, because he's not certified by POST, he's not certified by any one of these other entities that we are aware of. At least documentation hasn't been provided to us. So that's where the catch comes in. That would mean we're just accepting hours from anybody. Essentially, we could accept hours from the PetSmart trainer. And
well, I disagree with that. I think Russ can provide you his credentials more than a PetSmart employee could.
And I agree, he has credentials, but those credentials are expired and have been expired for 6 years.
Not only that, but as I understand, my discussions with Sergeant Lopez and former Sergeant Nope is that Mr. Bishop never was a judge. He may have been an instructor, but he never was a judge. And again, we could be incorrect on that. The documentation may not have been provided to us. And if that's the case, we'll be happy to relook at it.
I would like the council to know that it is, I experienced this years ago as a canine handler at a very similar position as the chief.
For a very long time, at least 20 years ago when I was a handler, the POST program was very accommodating. I did similar. I didn't go through the formal POST program, but I went through on duty, working nights, went through with a POST instructor, and was able to get my POST certification. And that, so we definitely recognize the challenges that these departments have and historically offered as much alternatives as I think we can. I think, Chief, I think that's our key issue right now, is if Russ had an instructor certification, you know, we just need to, you know, we know he was in the past. It's just, my understanding is nothing's current. I think that's our problem right now, Chief.
Well, I certainly understand that. I'm not arguing that at all. And you guys have been accommodating over the years. I think if he could provide credentials that would satisfy the council, that those hours of training could be recognized. I'm not asking him to judge or certify the dog. I want folks to do that. It's just training hours. That's all I'm looking for.
What's the pathway for someone to become a post-certified instructor?
If they're not employed by an agency. Say in this situation.
I would just say they're...
Post doesn't certify instructors that aren't current. You know, we're not in the business of certifying people who are non-law enforcement. And that's in many of our programs. We often get requests, can someone go through a firearms instructor school? We're here to serve current officers. But through some of these other organizations, I believe there are paths, Wendell.
Yes, sir.
So that would be the recommendation, get a certification as an instructor through one of those other certifying agencies.
And or, I don't know if the chief doesn't want to do this, but I think the only other option then would be to challenge. Like, allow the dog to challenge it, right? And go through it. So we'd have to allow the officer to challenge it too, if we can't find that other path.
No, I think my other option, which just delays me months, is to start the training over with her. And she trains, she gets her training hours in, whether it's through Utah County instructors or post, but I'm going to be looking at the spring before I have a dog on the road.
I can see this opening of Pandora's box where we could have anybody coming in and claiming that they've trained the dog, but under these circumstances, perhaps something from Mr. Bishop indicating what he has done with the dog and with the handler in the past and what his previous situation was, perhaps present it to post and see what they want to do with it, if anything at all. But I could see this opening a huge Pandora's box going forward.
I think with the options of these other two certifying agencies that was Russ, Mr. Bishop. Thank you. That Mr. Bishop could also go through aside from post. I mean, that seems like fairly clear direction and in compliance with the rule that we're looking at approving next session. So I agree with you, but if we're contemplating opening Pandora's box that we might not be able to close, it might be prudent to have that as the pathway.
If that makes some sense.
So if I can clarify, I sat on the committee. Either they are certified as an instructor, a current certified instructor by post, or they could be certified as a recognized certifying entity, a certified instructor through that entity. But someone has to hold that certification when the training hours are being done. Is that a good way to kind of capture what needs to happen?
I think that's what I'm hearing.
But in this situation where he wasn't certified and had the hours in, is there any leeway whatsoever?
Close that gap.
Yeah, is there a way to close that gap?
Vice Chair, to address that, I think from my concern with basic training, allowing those hours to enter would be akin to, again, using the analogy of the waiver, to just allow anybody that has an informal academy, quote unquote, to count their training hours towards the certification. I would struggle with that if we allowed non-certified training hours to come through.
That's Pandora's box I was talking about, and that's problematic. I agree.
Jumping that box forward when the dog does get challenged in court, and when we come back to this issue, are we just creating a bigger problem downstream by not addressing it now?
That's the rub.
If he gets challenged in court. Exactly.
As much as I hate to say it, Chief, I think you may have to go back through. If you can get Russ to, as much as I hate to say it, I think that's the only way to do it, if we want to do it right. But that's your liability if you do it that way.
Yeah. And I think that's the sentiment of post. We want to help everybody out as much as possible. We just don't see the avenue on this one.
Yeah, I think that's probably not the answer you were looking for, Chief Jackson, but I think that's the sentiment of post.
It's not, and I that's what I assumed it would go, and it's frustrating to know that the dog can come up there and pass the test right now, but isn't going to be able to be used for a few months. But that's the life we live. So thanks for at least listening to us.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
All right. Last thing before scheduling our next meeting is approval to changes of Utah Admin Rules 403 and 409. Mr. Yockey.
So as per the statute, Post is allowed to, is authorized to enter in rules. And we do have quite a few rules, but also per the statute, we have to get approval through the Post Council. These are just some modifications that your council, Rich Jorgensen and I, worked through together. Some of them were recognized by Post that we needed to update. A lot of these are just minor changes. I'm not going to go through them every single line, but I'm just going to draw your attention to a few of the key ones that we changed. Some of them are just updating the language because these rules were put into effect a long time ago and weren't in active voice. They were more of a passive voice, and so we're just trying to get them into correct language. But if I can draw your attention to Rule 728-403, so this is the application rule for an officer to become a peace officer. One of the ones that we changed was subsection 7 under so R728-403-4, so this would be on the fourth page on the back side. So it's subsection 7. An applicant who is dismissed from a basic training program for cheating or plagiarism is not eligible for further post-training or certification until a two-year waiting period has been met, unless it is for a traffic offense that is and I need to clean that up. That was not correct. So obviously we didn't catch that part, but yes.
I'm curious if that line was intended to go in the section above.
I believe it was, and that's why. So
where it talks about providing false information on the application.
That is correct. That line was in the previous subsection, so I don't know how we missed that. And thank you for the catch on that. The reason we are adding the cheating one, while we have it in there as far as the cheating, we have noticed, we feel like we have a good basis to prevent somebody if they have engaged in cheating or plagiarism, to prevent them from coming into the academy and further training. We just wanted to be a little clearer. And yes, that line, as far as it, unless it is for the traffic offense, was supposed to be for the up, to clarify that upper one. The other changes we made in this 403, if you recall quite a few councils ago with Scott Stevenson, Director Stevenson, we talked about moving everything to 18 months instead of a year. And so this just clarifies that an applicant has 18 months to finish their testing program. And that brings it in conformity with the statute that says that they, after 18 months, they become inactive. So an applicant, that includes the written test, the physical, any of the physical tests, the defensive tactics, they have 18 months to complete that process instead of a year. And so that's just clarifying that. Okay.
So under that 7A on that part, some of the language that was taken out was that makeup examination for the certification exam could be up to a year. So they have 1 year, but it doesn't look like we have a time frame now. It just says if they fail it twice.
Correct. So it would be twice there, but because we have the 18 months above, they'd be required to do the 18 months. So they'd still have the 18 months. This just...
So
right.
They could take the certification exam,
they have,
the
yeah.
second opportunity, up to 18 months
Correct.
From the time they get it.
Correct. Any questions, any other questions on this? Like I said, I'm not going to go. A lot of the changes were just what happened is Mr. Jorgensen and I just reviewed the rule. Once we noticed that we needed to update it with the 18-month thing and also the cheating aspect, we went through it and attempted to identify the other areas that just where the rule was poorly drafted and attempt to fix it. So any questions or concerns on 403?
I assume you're looking for a motion, Mr. Yockey?
Yes, on 403. If I could go with 409 really quick, and then I would love to get a motion on both. On 409, the reason we did the update on this, again, very similarly, we read through the entire rule to update it, but the reason for it, if we go to the definitions, we had some issues that we identified. So we're looking under the definition section just on the flip page of the first page. And this is, we're talking about sexual conduct. So we had some issues there as far as we entered into a rule. The statute says sexual conduct while on duty, and we were dinging individuals essentially for sexual conduct while they were not on duty. So we had to clarify. We took out subsection D and clarified that also, in this case, a dispatcher, it's not just a peace officer, but a dispatcher can also transmit the sexual images. And so we clarified that. A lot of cleanup language. The other thing we did is this was a statutory change in subsection 2 of R-728-409. This would be on page 4, which is on the back side, so the second page, but on the back side. Subsection 2, it says the division may not investigate conduct that is limited to a violation of employer's policy or procedure. Because of the update under 53.6 to 11.1G, we had to add that in there, G and H, and so that's why we added that in there. And then the only other change, the only other substantial change was the relinquishment procedures. We had questions come up regarding whether or not a peace officer can just relinquish on their own. Does it have to be while they're under investigation? And so this is just clarifying that it does not have to be under investigation. Yes, the statute allows you to relinquish while you're under investigation, and it's proactive, but an officer at any point can relinquish their peace officer certification. So this is just clarifying that, and we just wanted to make sure everybody was aware of that. And in that same section, actually in the very last page, so R-728-409-18, reporting violations, this is in conformity with the statute as well. With the revisions that were just added regarding peace chiefs, sheriffs, and administrative officers submitting their investigations over to post. Before we had, if you recall, we had the rule. Director Stevenson attempted to resolve it via rule back in the day. The legislature obviously didn't buy that, and so then they adopted the statute this last year, and now make it it's an issue that comes before the Post Council. It's our new I. So 53.6.211.1I is our new one. And so this just cleans that up, saying we struck subsection 2 and we did a new one and makes the findings within 30 days, which conforms with the law. So any questions or concerns?
Question going back to the 403.
Yes.
Under 403-7, the reactivation of certification, subsection, let's see, it looks like 4B indicates that if the applicant fails to pass certification examination, the applicant shall be given one additional opportunity to pass the certification examination, which must be completed with one year from the time of the application is completed by the applicant. I just wanted to clarify that because I thought in our previous conversation it was 18 months.
And so
that
this
was from the time of testing.
Yeah, so this is for the lovely thing about this rule is we address a few different things. We're talking about applications, so applicants to entering into the program. We're also talking about waivers and reactivations. So this is under the waiver section. If they're waiving in, our applications are only valid for a year. And so that's why they have that time limit on just those. If it's a brand new application, and yeah, it's 18 months.
Okay, but if I'm coming over from Colorado
from
to challenge, then 12 months.
Correct, because your application is only valid for that period
Thank
of time.
You.
Any other questions or concerns?
Yeah, back on 409.3 and the definitions of sexual misconduct.
Okay.
So you'll have to help me through this one because my dyslexic brain has read through this like four times.
No concerns.
But with the changes, the wording changes, it's maybe a little bit subtle, but as I read through it, adding while on duty or off duty, and then the disclaimers before, obviously, definition of what a sexual image is under A, but then under B, it says if the officer or it is transmitted to a officer or dispatcher while the recipient is on duty. Okay. But it appears as you read through that, that it would not be a violation if the officer was on duty, but it didn't qualify under B. In other words, it wasn't somebody in uniform.
So yeah, so this is where it gets a little different, right? So if I'm transmitting an image to somebody, and it may not be requested by the individual, but I, as a PCA, we have a two-piece officer situation. I am transmitting it to somebody, and it's of the sexual nature, and it's, and I know that they're on duty. I, as the officer who's off duty, sending that image will be dinged for it. The officer who received it, if they didn't request it, will not be dinged for it.
I'm great with that. I agree with that. But what I'm reading here, unless I'm reading it wrong, which is absolutely possible, if I'm an officer on duty, but I'm sending it to another officer or a dispatcher who's off duty, that would not be a violation as this is written. So an on-duty officer could send something to an off-duty officer without it being a violation of the way it's written.
I think, so I believe the new A, which was the previous B, would capture that. If the sexual image depicts the certified officer or dispatcher in uniform or depicts any official peace officer, I see where you can see, where you're saying we may need to tighten it up, yes.
It doesn't.
So it doesn't you're saying,
depict them. It's just a sexual image as defined above, but doesn't depict them in uniform.
I see what you're talking.
But there's still a, okay, that's an interesting one.
Other top of type of sexual
so and we hadn't covered that before in our previous rule. So
can we rely on under 2B to define that, or do we need to define it separately in this section?
So, and that's the one thing, we do have a lot of definitions that are working together, right? We have the definition of on duty, we also have the definition of sexual conduct and what it means. So in this case, if the officer is receiving compensation or actually engaged in their activity, I think we could probably clean it up, though. The sending, because we would have the sending, transmitting, giving, exchanging, selling, soliciting, or posting through any means a sexual image by a certified officer while on duty or off duty. And then we just get clarifying under Alpha and Bravo, we do have clarifying. So I believe it covers
The problem is your colon there. The colon after that sentence, while on duty or off duty, if A or B. So the sheriff sparks, if someone's on duty and sends a sexual image to anyone while they're on duty, unless if they're not a certified peace officer, it's not a violation.
So we will, thank you for bringing that up. We will definitely work on that and clean that up.
Nope.
We will close that loop. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Again, these are
colons and commas.
Colons and commas. You gotta love them. Any other suggestions or comments before? So, what the process will happen? We'll get approval from if this is acceptable with those suggested changes. Will we close that loop? We will. What will happen is we will then push it through the Utah Department of Public Safety's rules coordinator, who will then. Posted to our rules. It takes about 90 days for it to get posted, and then or 60 days to get posted, and then we go from there. So we just push it to them. They get everything posted, and it will become active rule. Any questions, concerns, or anything like that? And so if I could get a motion to approve these two rules so we can move forward on the process with the suggested revisions by in consideration of by Sheriff Sparks, and then that other revision on 403 regarding the mistype of placing that subset paragraph underneath.
So if I understand correctly, the motion would be to accept the changes, and I think it would be appropriate that if you get a positive vote from the council today that you give us a completed document so we can see it at the next council meeting with the changes.
So before going to the Rules Committee?
Yes.
Okay. So in that case, then I don't need, if that's the case, then we'll just get approval at the next post council meeting.
I think the statute doesn't require approval of the council, it requires the advice of the council. But if you want to see them back, that's
I would rather see it back.
Okay. So we will hold off on these rule changes then, and we will come back with the revisions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We could also have the chair and or vice chair review to ensure that those that Chair Sparks' comments were included if we wanted to go through an approval, if everyone felt comfortable with that. Instead of all of us.
Preemptory vote, and I could take a look at it along with
that would just Chief expedite Carpenter. The process.
Will people accept that?
Well, for the advice of council, probably has to be a quorum.
Okay. Well, never mind then.
All right. Let's bring it back to the next council.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I think we're down to scheduling our next meeting. Where are we, Julie? How far are we out?
December or January.
December is always a horrible month. I would suggest January. Early January.
Ninth.
January the 9th?
It works.
It sounds like January the 9th at 10 o'clock. With that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
I doubt there's any discussion on that. All in favor? Aye. Say aye.
Aye.
Passes. Aye. We are adjourned. Thank you.